I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is renowned historian Simon Shama, creator of the new TV series, The Story of the Jews. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Borel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. You may have noticed there's a certain bias in religious circles against the humorous, a sense that spirituality is at odds with what is funny. In fact, there are entire religious sects devoted to avoiding humor, and a lack of laughter is one of the elements that somebody is supposed to expect from a sober clergyman. To be authentic, apparently, religion has to be boring. Well, the wonderful Jewish holiday of Purim is here today to counteract that notion completely. I would proudly maintain that comedy is as essential to human spiritual life as prayer. Poet Don Pagis said it in his poem Biped, "Only the human being among all the other animals laughs." We need to laugh, and comedy and its various humorous sub-themes help us do just that. There is even a great deal of evidence in the Bible that humor is an essential part of the human equation. Indeed, that God appreciates a good joke. One of the great patriarch's names in Judaism is Isaac, which means he will laugh, Yitzchak. And the mitzvah on Purim is to have simcha v'sason v'kar, joy, laughter, and celebration. Admittedly, a lot of Jewish humor is gallows humor. You know, that's entirely appropriate to the story in the Book of Esther. You know the routine. All the Jewish holidays from Hanukkah to Pesach can be summed up in 9 words. They tried to kill us. We won. Let's eat. And, of course, as the saying goes, the phrase Jewish comedian is redundant. It would be positively anti-historical to say that a people that has produced comedians from Sholem Aleichem to the Marx Brothers, to Jack Benny, to Milton Berle, to Mel Brooks, to Jackie Mason, to Billy Crystal, to Richard Lewis, to Jerry Seinfeld, to Jon Stewart, to Sarah Silverman, not to mention George Burns, Sid Caesar, Jerry Lewis, Neil Simon, Lenny Bruce, Buddy Hackett, Alan King, Tom Lehrer, Robert Klein, Woody Allen, David Steinberg, Gilda Radner, Larry David, Fran Drescher, Richard Lewis, Adam Sandler, and many more, that our people doesn't believe in the inherently comic possibilities of life. Well, Purim is here today for fun, and we're going to highlight a few favorite Jewish comedy musical cuts. Good excuse, no? To play us in on this holiday morning, here is Rick Moranis' quite spectacular song, I'm Live Blogging the Himmel Family Bris, in honor of the deeply ridiculous celebration of this wonderful Jewish holiday.
I'm live blogging Marky Himmel's Bris. I just gave Marky Himmel's Uncle Manny a kiss. I'm posting, I'm hosting, I'm filing, I'm sharing that Marky's Uncle Manny smells a lot like herring. I'm live blogging the Himmel Family Bris. The Moyle just avoided getting hit with Marky's piss. There's laughter, there's joy, there's loving and caring. How does this guy do it while everyone is staring? I'm live blogging, L'chaim blogging, wasn't Rushy just a blog? The Moyle is bandaging Marky Himmel's hog. I'm trying to grab a photo to put it in my blog. I'm transferring a sound file of Marky Himmel screaming. It's drowning out the sound of the chafing dishes steaming. There's blintzes and yellies and cream cheese with chives. The Moyle stuff is separate from the plastic forks and knives. There's coffee and babka, a frozen chocolate log. I'm pressing with one hand so I can live blog. I'm live blogging. Just the blog. I'm up
upstairs now and going through some drawers. It looks like Michael Himmel's been stealing from the stores. No wonder he paid cash for that monstrosity in Quag. I'm scanning all the evidence, it's right there on my blog. Look at these prescriptions, the Himmels are depressed. No wonder Shelley Himmel's in at least a 14 dress. Not a single guest towel, the whole place has a stink. I'll send a thank you email with a Bed and Bath link. I'm live blogging. Just a blog. I'm live blogging, a virtual addiction. Most of it is true, but more of it is fiction. I'm aggregating, permalinking, tagging what I can. I load it up on Pate, but I think it's really spam. I'm live blogging the Himmel family bris. Their Simchas have a record of being hit and miss. I'll take a doggy bag, even though I got no dog. I got the recipe for Shelley's frozen chocolate log. The recipe's available by clicking on my blog. You can even taste the chocolate log by licking on my blog. Be careful if your tongue winds up sticking to my blog. I'm live blogging.
That was actor, comedian, and sort of singer Rick Moranis performing his song I'm Live Blogging the Himmel Family Bris from his CD My Mother's Brisket in honor of Purim today. You know, Purim set the pattern for every raucous end of winter, early spring festival in human history, from Mardi Gras to Carnival to Spring Fling to Rodeo, and I would include tomorrow's observance of St. Patrick's Day in that list. So, when Purim and St. Paddy's Day nearly coincide, actually, tomorrow is technically speaking Shushan Purim, Purim for walled cities, so it's still Purim somewhere, it seems perfect to play Alan Sherman's great parody of the classic Irish song, Dear Old Donegal, also known as Shake Hands with Your Uncle Mike, or, as Alan Sherman titles it, Shake Hands with Your Uncle Max. To play us in a little more on this Purim morning, just before St. Patrick's Day, here it is.
I sell a line of plastics, and I travel on the road, and I have a case of samples, which, believe me, is a load. Every night a strange cafe, a strange hotel, and then early in the morning, I am on the road again. When the season's over and my lonesome journey ends, that's the only time I see my family and my friends. I drive up Ocean Parkway, and before I stop the car, my ma leans out the window and she hollers, "Here we are." Shake hands with your Uncle Max, my boy, and here is your sister Cheryl, and here is your cousin Isabel, that's Irving's oldest girl. And you remember the Tishman twins, Gerald and Jerome. We all came out to greet you and to wish you welcome home. Meet Merowitz, Barowitz, Handelman, Shandelman, Sperber and Gerber and Steiner and Stone. Moskowitz, Lupowitz, Aarons and Behrens, Feynman and Feynman and Friedman and Cohn. Smolowitz, Wallowitz, Teitelbaum, Mandelbaum, Levin, Levinsky, Levine and Levi. Brumberger, Schlumberger, Minkus and Thinkus and Stein with an E-I and Stein with a Y. Shake hands with your Uncle Sal, mine boy, and here is your brother Sid, and here is your cousin Yetta, who expects another kid. Whenever you're on the road, mine boy, wherever you may roam, we'll all be here when you come back to wish you well.
That was Alan Sherman's Shake Hands with Your Uncle Max, a true classic for Purim and St. Patrick's Day tomorrow. On a more profound note, when we come back on Too Jewish this Purim morning, we'll meet the outstanding historian Simon Shama, presenter and creative mind behind a whole lot of TV series, and in particular, the documentary The Story of the Jews, a fine new series. He's delightful and funny, and we'll meet him when we come back on this Purim edition of Too Jewish. Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. He's Professor Simon Shama, the distinguished historian who is perhaps best known for his work on the French Revolution, but has also been the creative force behind some important documentary series on history and has a new one out called The Story of the Jews, which is about to be released. Good morning and welcome.
Hello, pleasure.
So what provoked you to probe your own history after probing so many other people's, the history of Britain?
Well, it's true. I mean, when I was growing up as an historian in the 60s, you fell into two camps, really. You either did your own story, a reversion of it, and I was in Britain, so people who took that view, you know, did, I don't know, the Tudors or Queen Victoria or something. And I along with a lot of other people, took the opposite view, that if history is a study of people removed from you in time and place, that's kind of more of a stretch and more of a challenge to one's imagination. So, you know, that's part of the explanation, I think, not completely all of it. So, as you say very kindly, I went off and did French history and Dutch history and American history. I did actually write one book about Jewish history called Two Rothschilds and the Land of Israel.
That's right, it was like your second book or so, wasn't it?
It was my second book, and it was a kind of book that came to me through the brilliant and dangerous Lord Rothschild, actually, in Britain. And it was, he used to smoke Turkish cigarettes at me, which is very seductive, and feed me Rothschild wine, which is even more seductive.
Indeed.
And it was a wonderful archive to work on, actually, Sam. It was an archive which was very strong in the kind of first Aliyah period of the Lovers of Zion, the Chofeve Tzion. So kind of pre-Herzl settlements that were set up in then Turkish Palestine. It was really riveting on that. So I did that book, but I felt uncomfortable for all sorts of reasons. I did have the sense I was too close, and I think I kind of overcompensated by a rather kind of chilly manner throughout. I don't know what it was, but I went back to the story of other people's. But I did run a little seminar at Cambridge University with a friend of mine on post-biblical Jewish history, because there was no way, actually, for anyone interested, not just Jews, interested in Jewish history to actually take it in university courses. So in a kind of slightly amateurish way, I kept my hand in. And, you know, every so often I would feel the muse of Jewish history, a bit like my mother saying, you don't call, you don't write. Why are you ashamed or something? Every Yom Kippur I would count up my enormous number of sins.
Of course.
And kind of being frightened of Jewish history was one of them. So when the BBC said, we have a project for you, I knew before it was out of the mouth of really the producer what it was going to be. And I thought, my father used to say, you only regret the things you do. You don't do.
You don't do, right.
And I'm getting quite old now. I didn't want to die and not have a crack at this.
Well, it's a great series. I just saw the first part because it's being released, okay, you know, in the wonderful teaser manner that these things come out. We will talk much more with Simon Shama about his Tshuva project to explore Jewish history, the story of the Jews.
Just the Chuva project.
When we come back in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco, people don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Kohan. Part of it is cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, flavorings from Flavor Art in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or akvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. The Temple Emmanuel Pilgrimage Trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is coming June 11th to June 23rd, 2014. If you want to go with me on this wonderful journey to Israel, a fantastic chance to see it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to the River Jordan to Jerusalem, email twojewishradio18, twojewishradio18@gmail.com, or call 520-327-4501 for more information on how to come. It is Purim today, Chag Sameach, which gives us a good excuse to play some classic, very silly Jewish comedy shticks from the late, great Mickey Katz, as performed by his son, entertainer Joel Gray. This was from Prairie Home Companion. Here are two Yiddish Western classics, Borscht Riders in the Sky and David Crockett.
An old cowpunch went out to lunch beyond the pearly gates. He walked into a vegetarian restaurant called Nate's. Tired and icy bucket from flying with his horse.
Come, it's horse, he yelled out, give me a plate of borscht.
Yippee ho ho! Yippee wash ding dong!
Riders in the sky.
Born in the wilds of Delancey Street, home of gefilte fish and kosher meat, handy with the knife for hairs of tea, he flicked him a chicken when he was only three. David Crockett, he sat in the sun and garocket and gebocket. David Crockett, he's back on Delancey Street.
That was Joel Gray on Garrison Keillor's Prairie Home Companion, singing a couple of his father Mickey Katz's classic Jewish shtick songs in honor of Purim today. We welcome our Mivi Na'an Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Chag Purim Sameach.
Chag Sameach, Rabbi.
So, Americans love comedy. Israelis love humor. After all, in America, most humor was created by Jewish comedians. What are the popular programs in Israel? Who are the funniest comedians in Israel today?
We have Eretz Nehederet. I'm sure you're familiar
still
with.
Still on. It's
yeah,
been on a long
still.
Time.
And Matzav Uma. And we still, and we have like a very, I would say, it's not classical, but like people like Nor Tzion or Yaakov Cohen that really...
They've been around for a while.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
So,
is but they're still funny.
They
and Adir
Miller,
funny. Yeah.
Yeah, the, you know, old guys can be very funny. is there anything unique about Israeli humor? What's the spirit of humor in Israel?
You know, politician, of course.
Making
fun of all of our leaders. And but like there is no, how do you say, there is no parak dosha, like we are,
there's no curtain, there's no
yeah.
holy line you cannot cross
yeah.
in Israel. You can say anything about anybody.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's unique that even there is a black humor, how do you call it,
dark humor
yeah. also. Well, making fun of everything, it's kind of I think it's kind of a tool of Litmudet to survive. So, and there is a. Do you want to talk to about like how the Israeli making fun of?
Oh, Israelis make
Jewish,
fun of everybody. They make fun
yeah,
of Jewish traditions.
Jewish Americans,
they make fun of Arabs. They make fun of themselves as much as anybody. But
yeah,
my
know,
favorite
yeah.
program, I think, maybe it was on Eretz Nehederet. They made fun of the birthright Americans. You know, going on a birthright trip, and they had different Israeli comedians playing the American, and you could hear like these strong, terrible American Hebrew accents and making fun of the girls from New Jersey and the guys from the Midwest and mm-hmm. and how very shallow the Americans seem to Israelis. Is that true? Do we seem very shallow?
I don't know if the main issue was the shallow. I think it's the how the Jewish American like their excitement. They're
right.
extremely excitement of Israel. And I think, you know, after the comedian part of it, I think it's deliver a very important message to Israel, like that the Jewish people abroad are very excited about Israel. And I think it was, even though it was kind of comedian, but it was also an educational part of it.
It's a very nice way to put it. I have to say it's hysterical. If you can watch it on YouTube, even if you don't have much Hebrew, it's really, really funny. Chag Purim Sameach, a happy holiday of Purim.
Chag Sameach.
And now it's time for a recurring, inscrutably irregular feature of Too Jewish, Wisdom from Zen Judaism. Accept misfortune as a blessing. Do not wish for perfect health or a life without problems. What would you talk about? Zen is not easy. It takes effort to attain nothingness. And then what do you have? Bupkis. And finally, take only what is given. Own nothing but your robes, unless, of course, you have the closet space. That was Eternal Wisdom from Zen Judaism. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, the Ukraine has been all over the news. Formerly part of the Soviet Union, Vladimir Putin giving evil signals towards the Ukrainian change in government, corruption, all kinds of trouble going on. Can you clarify a little bit about what's going on there for a country that I think Americans essentially never think about?
Well, it's more than just mixed signals from Putin. It's troop movements. And it's pretty clear that Putin doesn't want to go down in history as the Russian leader who lost the Crimea, if not the whole Ukraine, because Russians have a special relationship with the Crimea.
Going back to like the Crimean War in the 19th century?
Or? Oh, going way back, much earlier than that. But we should, because this is a rapidly changing situation and we're not live here.
Don't tell anybody on the air that. That's a terrible thing to say. Just kidding. Go ahead.
Sorry.
That's all right.
We should probably talk about some of the fundamentals. So if you go way, way, way back in time, the beginning of the Russian state, around, vaguely speaking, the time of the Crusades, around the year 1000, 1100, was actually centered in Kiev.
Yeah, and it was called Kiev.
It right? was called the Kievan Rus.
Yeah.
And the foundations of the Russian Orthodox Church are ironically there in Ukraine, and the oldest, most splendid monasteries in the former Soviet Union are arguably those in and around Kiev. So in some senses, Kiev and what we think of today as Ukraine was the ancestor or the cradle of Russian civilization. Then, of course, Russian czars emerged. A capital was eventually created in Moscow and then got shifted to St. Petersburg for various reasons having to do with the Enlightenment and an attempt by Peter the Great to modernize his country and to follow in the footsteps of Constantine the Great and name the capital after himself, and also shift the capital west and make it a port. There were a lot of reasons that Peter the Great decided to make St. Petersburg his capital. But going back to the 17th century, the Russians basically dominated the Ukrainians and forced them to sign a treaty of eternal friendship or something, which became a model for future Soviet treaties in the same vein. And this treaty basically made Ukraine a vassal state with some nominal independence. And even after the Soviet Revolution and even after World War II, theoretically, Ukraine was an independent state with its own seat in the UN. Ukraine and Belarus were considered separate states from the Soviet Union. So there's a long and ambivalent history of kind of love, hate, subjugation, influence, et cetera, between Ukraine and Russia that stretches back for at least 1,000 years. And I think maybe next week we should look at what's the impact of that on today's events.
I should also note that many Jews who come from quote-unquote Russia actually came from the Ukraine. There's lots of Jews with
Belarus, whatever. Right.
We will talk next week. Thanks, Tom.
Bye.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Moshe, a young Talmud student who left Borough Park some years earlier to go to California, returns to visit his family, and his mother notices he has changed and how. But Moshe, asks his mother, where's your beard? Ma, he replies, in California today, nobody wears a beard. But at least you keep Shabbos, his mother asks. Ma, business is business. In California, everybody works on Shabbos. But kosher food you still eat, asks his mother. Ma, in California, it's very difficult to keep kosher. Then silence, while his elderly mother thinks about what he has just told her. Finally, she leans over and whispers in his ear, Moshe, tell me, are you still circumcised? That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well and stay circumcised. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion is the third in the book of Leviticus, Shmini, and it includes a very dramatic and traumatic event. The tabernacle in the wilderness has just been consecrated, and the priests, Moses' brother Aaron and his sons, are entering into their office. God's presence fills the tabernacle. All is good with the people. And then suddenly disaster strikes. Aaron's eldest sons, newly ordained priests named Nadav and Avihu, offer what is called Esh Zara, a strange fire to the Lord. They are immediately struck down and devoured by fire from God, dying before the Lord. In the aftermath of this tragic shock, Moses consoles Aaron with peculiar words. God says, by those brought near to me, I am consecrated, Moses says, and honored before the people. There is no word on whether Aaron accepted this as somehow a just ending for his sons. The text merely says, Vayidom Aharon, Aaron was silent. We do not know the young priest's offense, if any. We are not told what their strange fire was. God decrees, atonement offerings are made for whatever sin they may have committed, and the people are restored to God's favor. We also do not know why certain tragedies take place or why terrible things happen to good people sometimes. As Ben Sirach says in the text Ecclesiasticus from the Apocrypha of the Hebrew Bible, we have been shown more than we can understand. We do know that Aaron's silence may be the only real response to profound tragedy and loss, and our comfort may come only when we silently acknowledge our own powerlessness. This may seem small comfort indeed, but it is also an honest appraisal of our ability to comprehend profound loss. May God keep us from tragedy, but may God also give us the strength of Aaron when we have to face it, the ability to accept the painful inadequacy of our own explanations with dignity and courage. So what does it mean to be a Jew? In order to understand that, you need to understand Jewish history, which is a complex and intricate thing. And no one has done a better job of presenting the totality of Jewish culture, ideology, and history in a TV program than Simon Shama, the renowned historian and documentarian and creative force behind the new documentary, The Story of the Jews, which comes out this week. Meet him and see just what Abba Eban had to do with this terrific new TV series when we return on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft, and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114. We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
No one knows how it happened, and no one is taking responsibility for it, but now it has been revoked, and everybody says it was never meant to happen. Well, that sounds like Israeli politics to me. Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu and the Israeli cabinet have decided to revoke a controversial agreement to give the right-wing Elad City of David Foundation control of the area of the Western Wall, the Davidson Center, that had been earmarked for non-Orthodox prayer. Rabbi Rick Jacobs, president of the Union for Reform Judaism, said that Cabinet Secretary Avichai Mandelblit phoned him personally to pledge that the cabinet would override the agreement with Elad on Sunday or Monday of this week, that's today or tomorrow. Mandelblit said the government would be the only partner to arrangements at the designated non-Orthodox prayer area. The reform leader added that Diaspora Affairs Minister Naftali Bennett also phoned him to assure him of his support for rescinding the Elad transfer. The news was first reported in Haaretz last week that while the government was hammering out details on the Sharansky Agreement on non-Orthodox access to the southern part of the Western Wall, the Kotel, the government-owned company for the reconstruction and development of the Jewish quarter of the Old City of Jerusalem entered into an agreement with Elad to manage the exact same area. That agreement stunned non-Orthodox leaders in America and created a serious crisis of confidence between the diaspora and the Israeli cabinet. In the wake of a sharply worded letter, in which leaders of the Reform and Conservative movement said they were shocked and dismayed at the developments, and that transfer of the site to Elad would effectively end the Sharansky Compromise, the two sides met in Washington last week during Netanyahu's visit to the U.S. The compromise proposed by Jewish Agency Chairman and hero of the Jewish people, Natan Sharansky, aimed to end the standoff created by the efforts of Women of the Wall to gain unfettered access to pray in the women's section of the Kotel, the Western Wall. The Elad Foundation, which devotes itself to strengthening the Jewish character of Jerusalem, has been long criticized for evicting Palestinian families from their homes in East Jerusalem and for conducting archaeological excavations, sometimes controversial ones, aimed at highlighting Jerusalem's Jewish history. Rabbi Rick Jacobs quoted Mandelblit, assuring him that the cabinet has the authority to override any agreement with Elad, and it would be doing so early. He said the government would be our only partner at the proposed site. There's no way any private management would be appropriate. Jacobs said that all the government officials involved in negotiations over the new prayer site have denied any previous knowledge of the arrangement with Elad. But he added the reports of the Elad move called into question whether we could reach any kind of agreement with the Israeli government. Rabbi Jacobs said, "We will now have to get back to the hard and important work of working out remaining details and do it with a sense of urgency, trust, and goodwill." Good work by Rabbi Rick Jacobs, a guest of Two Jewish just last month. We can only hope that this won't turn into politics as usual in Israel after all. And now, three travel-related tales. British Prime Minister David Cameron addressed the Israeli Knesset last week, becoming only the second English premier to visit Israel. He made a passionate appeal in the Israeli parliament for its leaders to recognize the dividend of peace. And he poured praise on Israel's values, vowing that Britain would steadfastly oppose any boycott of Israel. Cameron also denounced Iran as a despotic regime intent on arming Israel's enemies, adding that he believed he would be fighting the threat posed by political extremism all his political life. In his speech to the Knesset, only the second ever made by a British prime minister, David Cameron laid down a few challenges to his audience, but made only a passing reference to the issue of Israeli illegal settlements on the West Bank, illegal in quotes, one of the biggest stumbling blocks to the elusive peace deal now being sought by John Kerry and the Americans. He said, "We back the compromises needed, including the halt to settlement activity and an end to Palestinian incitement." Cameron's no boycott message does not sit so well with recently issued UK government advice highlighting problems and risks associated with doing business with Israeli settlements and related activities in occupied Palestinian territory. Published on the Israel page of the UK's Department of Trade and Industry website, the guidance warns that there are clear risks related to economic and financial activities in the settlements. We do not encourage or offer support to such activity. But in general, Prime Minister Cameron's speech was staunchly pro-Israel. He repeatedly referred to Israel as the nation-state of the Jewish people. Cameron promised that his belief in Israel is unbreakable. His commitment to Israel's security will always be rock solid. The firing of rockets by Hamas terrorists from the Gaza Strip into Israel during Cameron's speech provided an opportunity for him to condemn those attacks as barbaric and indiscriminate. The rocket attacks, more of the same, I guess, which took place while Cameron addressed the Israeli parliament, included a barrage of 40 to 50 missiles from Hamas-controlled Gaza directed at southern Israel. They landed about 35 miles from Jerusalem while Cameron was meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu and doing his speaking. Margaret Thatcher was the first British prime minister to visit Israel in office way back in 1986. It took another 28 years for it to happen again. May it happen sooner next time. And so much for the positive results of the Arab Spring. Israeli tourists above the cruise ship Norwegian Jade were barred from disembarking in the port of Tunis last week. They were forced to stay on board while non-Israeli Jewish passengers could get off in Tunisia. A Canadian Jew on board said there were approximately 20 Israelis on the ship, but at first no one else knew they were denied entry because the ship kept it a secret. They only found out because some had become friendly with some of the Israelis. "We met with the captain twice," the Canadian said, and his story kept up that he was waiting for instructions from head office in Miami. "We told him he was making a political statement by not allowing the Israelis to leave the ship, and he said it was out of his hands. We reminded him that he was the captain," the passenger said, adding that a handful of them decided to remain on board, joining the protest. There were more Israelis on the MSC line ship nearby that was docked next to them in Tunis. B'nai B'rith Canada issued a statement criticizing Norwegian Cruise Lines for failing to notify passengers ahead of time that they were not welcome on Tunisian soil by the government. But in the wake of the incident, pun intended, Norwegian Cruise Lines dropped Tunisia from its itineraries the next day. "We want to send a strong message to Tunisia and ports around the world that we will not tolerate such random acts of discrimination against our guests," said Kevin Sheehan, Norwegian Cruise Lines CEO. The ADL praised Norwegian Cruise Lines for its courageous and responsible decision. And finally, a remarkable story, also about travel, or not traveling, perhaps. A Jewish air traveler says he cheated death when he decided not to fly on Shabbat and so avoided being on board the doomed Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. The lucky Globetrotter changed his mind about booking the flight after a religiously observant travel agent refused to book him from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. According to a man named Daniel Eleff, a friend of the travel agent, CEO of the Cleveland-based travel site dansdeals.com. "Holy God, you surely heard what happened to Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, the traveler said in an email. "I cannot stop thinking about this. This is a true miracle for the books. You are a true lifesaver." "I am so happy for you," the agent responded, but he saw a larger plan at work. "No, I am not the lifesaver. God and Shabbat were your lifesavers. You owe them something." The Malaysia Airlines flight disappeared without a trace about an hour after taking off from Kuala Lumpur. Authorities are still searching for the wreckage, seeking an explanation for what they assume was the crash. The flight switch drama unfolded when this guy asked his travel agent to book a flight on March 8th, but the agent, who is an Orthodox Jew, said he did not want to help another Jew to travel on Shabbat. "I wish I could give you a day later, but you know, I just don't like flying Jews on Shabbat," he wrote in an email to the guy, one of several emails between the two men posted on a blog on dansdeals.com. The man told the agent not to hold the Friday morning flight. He decided to book a flight on Shabbat independently. "I guess I'll just book the Shabbat flight myself," he told the agent, but asked him to book the rest of his itinerary. But later that evening, the guy changed his mind and decided not to fly on Shabbos after all, thanking the agent for prompting him to consider the obligation not to travel on that holy day. "I reconsidered. You are right. I should be more observant," he said. "I'll manage that day without being in Kuala Lumpur." The travel agent booked the Friday flight, and both men put the matter away. On March 7th, the guy successfully flew on Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. 24 hours later, the same flight ended in tragedy, resulting in the presumed deaths of 239 human beings. After Shabbat ended on March 8th, the travel agent turned on his computer and read the grateful email. The story of the near miss was posted by this fellow at dansdeals.com. "It is a tragic story, but there's one small redeeming miracle because of Shabbat, I guess." And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. He's Professor Simon Shama, the distinguished historian who has written one of the really seminal books about the French Revolution, a great deal about the history of the Netherlands, important books on the history of Britain, and some creative books of history, which we can explore too, but also the creative force between some very important BBC documentaries
The latest of which, The Story of the Jews, is, in my opinion, the most professional and best documentary on the Jews I've seen, since Abba Eban and probably ever. Yeah. So I have to ask you, did Eban's series ever come into your mind when you were doing this?
Yes, of course it had to, and I knew him just a tiny bit, actually. I'm old enough. In fact, he was known in Cambridge. I mean, he wasn't there then, as Aubrey.
Which Aubrey, was really right. That's just so wonderful. So British.
Yeah. Do you ever think of him as Aubrey?
No, never.
He was a South African Jew.
Yeah.
Who had a very distinguished career at Cambridge University. And I was running a graduate magazine as a kind of callow young faculty member, for which he'd written. So when I met him a couple of times, and he was extraordinary. He was the most eloquent ambassador to the United Nations. So he was a great man in all sorts of ways. But when I came to make this, Sam, I remember the series pretty well, and I took a self-denying ordinance, that I wouldn't watch it. If I trusted my colleagues to tell me if I really, veered too close to what he'd done, to be kind of egregiously imitative, and I hoped I wouldn't. But I remember the kind of tone, which was really wonderful, being very kind of monumental and grand, and the series, you'll remember, was called Heritage.
Heritage, right.
And this sounds a bit facetious, but when I had one of my production meetings with our crew, I said, okay, this is going to be a series with no backlit camels whatsoever, actually. I can't even remember if there were, but I kind of had the feeling there were backlit camels galore in Abra Eban's wonderful series. I wanted it to be slightly more broken, slightly more questioning, a little less grandiose. And I think it was all those things. And I, as you very kindly said, possibly between our talks, this is a kind of teshuvah return for me. So while I didn't set out to make it a kind of personal odyssey, it sort of became that. It couldn't help being that. And then the issue comes in television. Is it so personal to become kind of creepy, really? Excessively subjective and personalized, especially for public television, which doesn't really like that very much. So that was always a difficult, I was conscious of that being a complicated thing in the series. But it has a kind of freshness, I hope. There's an awful lot of research that's happened. The archaeology has changed dramatically since Abra Eban did his series, and the way we think about Jewish art, not as an oxymoron any longer,
right,
has changed really dramatically, actually, over the last 20, 30 years. We know, for example, that for almost half a millennium, for 500 years, the first synagogues to have existed after the destruction of the temple, from Galilee through to North Africa, through to Rome, were covered in mosaics and images. We're covered in images.
Absolutely. I think of the Tzipori mosaics with the zodiac and all
that's
kinds of
right.
things that you think are totally forbidden,
we,
and yet they're there.
We begin episode two exactly with the Tzipori mosaics, but they're in Bet Alpha in a cruder way. They're at Bet Shean. They're pretty much everywhere.
Everywhere, all right.
Yeah, exactly.
In preparing this series, obviously, no matter how much you have to do a great deal more research. What was the most surprising thing you discovered?
Well, Elefantini was amazing. I did know about its existence. Elefantini, for your listeners, happens in the first program, and it's a colony of mercenary soldiers. We don't really think of ourselves as, Starkers, really, patrolling the Egyptian frontier for the Persian Empire. But there we all were, and Jewish soldiers had their families with them. They're encouraged to produce children who are supposed to grow up to be little soldiers for the Persian Empire on its remote colonial fringe and the upper reaches of the Nile. And really by accident, this extraordinary trove of papyri survived, were discovered at the end of the 1800s. The period I'm talking about is the Persian period. So it's the period when Ezra and Nehemiah are rebuilding Jerusalem, and much of the Tanakh is being written at that very moment. And here on the Nile, you have an extraordinary community and the records of people who are defying Jerusalem rules, really. I mean, not I think, as and with any kind of radical revolutionary instinct, but they're just doing their own thing. They build their own sanctuary, which is clearly a temple, in despite the fact that it's strictly against what the Jerusalem temple had laid down. They convert Egyptian slave girls and women, and sometimes Jewish women convert Egyptian men. They keep Passover and Shabbat, we know that. They all have Hebrew-ish names. They speak Aramaic, mostly. But this was a kind of amazing window opened onto an early diaspora world. And you could follow it in all the ways one thinks about, you know, what preoccupies Jews from time to time, and arguments over wills and marriages and property disputes. And I kind of love the suburban ordinariness of it, in a way, actually. So it's a kind of parallel universe to the universe of the Bible itself, and that was really quite wonderful.
You know, I remember the historian David Ruderman talking about the ghetto in Venice, you know, the first walled enclosure for Jews, and he said the walls of the ghetto were a semi-permeable membrane.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, they're only shut at night, and people come and go. I mean, it's very, again, very, this is, I've been writing about in the second volume, and David Ruderman knows more about it than almost anybody else, but in 1531, a flock of patricians and Venetian Gentiles come to see the Purim Spiel. Purim Spiel becomes a kind of popular pastime in many of those North Italian cities, in Mantua and Ferrara. And that's a good example of how it was possible for two cultures to live side by side and share the same space. They used to come in here to Rashot. They used to come in here sermons from the great kind of sermon artist, Leo of Modena. Yeah. I mean, the King of France's brother comes to the, I see, it was the Ponentine, the Spanish and Portuguese synagogue, Schuola, in Venice. To hear Leone of Modena preach a Shabbat sermon, King of France's brother, is absolutely amazing. So, you know, there are places indeed which look grimly segregated and aren't so. Rome was a different story. Rome, I think, was much more brutally separated out.
The presence of the Pope, no doubt, had something to do with that.
Well, a very fanatical Pope. I mean, the early popes of the 16th century are Kabbalists. And they're extremely interested in Kabbalah and the Zohar and the Bahur, and they have Hebrew teachers. And then it all goes terribly downhill in the middle of the 16th century.
Well, and of course, we're influenced by things like the Counter-Reformation, too.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's very interesting. I mean, the idea of a bull in 1555 called Cum Nimis Absurdum was meant to physically not just lock the Jews into a ghetto, which was, you know, right by the Tiber, where the ghetto still is, which was regularly flooded, but reduce them to a very limited number of occupations. They've been all over different kinds of Roman occupations, but they were going to be reduced basically to rag selling and money lending. And the one occupation which, you know, suddenly triggered attention was Jews were not going to be able to be allowed to be doctors and have Christian, at least to have doctors who had Christian patients. Jewish doctors have always, since antiquity, been in incredibly high demand, actually.
And still today.
This is an example where the Christian patricians in Rome were certainly not going to abandon their Jewish doctors. So sometimes even the ferocity of the popes could be set aside. But it was a very, very tough place and a tough time.
You know, I feel like we could go on forever, but we're out of time. By all means, The Story of the Jews is a fantastic series and a great book. I can't wait to see it. I want to thank Simon Shama for a great and too brief visit here on Too Jewish. Hope we get the chance to do it again.
That would be very nice. Thank you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best.
To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Rabbi Aaron Penkin, the new president of Hebrew Union College, Jewish Institute of Religion. Our playout this morning in the spirit of the raucous holiday of Purim comes from the immortal Kinky Friedman. It's his great ballad, They Ain't Making Jews Like Jesus Anymore. My friends, have a Chag Purim Sameach, a very happy holiday of Purim, and have a Shavuot Tov, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
Well, a redneck nerd in a bowling shirt was a guzzling Lone Star beer. Yeah! Talking religion and a politics for all the world to hear. They ought to send you back to Russia, boy, or New York City, one. You just want to doodle a Christian girl and you kill God's only son. I said, has it occurred to you, you nerd, that that's not very nice? We Jews believe it was Santa Claus that killed Jesus Christ. You know you don't look Jewish, you said, near as I could figure. I had you lamped for a slightly anemic, well-dressed country. Oh, they ain't making Jews like Jesus anymore. We don't turn the other cheek the way we've done before. You could hear that honky holler as he hit that hardwood floor. Lord, they ain't making Jews like Jesus anymore. Wichita.